Our next case for argument is 21-1937, Vocalife versus Amazon. All right, Mr. Ray, please proceed.
May it please the court. The sole issue before you is whether or not the plaintiff, Vocalife, could show that an Amazon user or Amazon customer of the Echo device could literally infringe a claim of 330 words.
Well, you say it's a sole issue, but there's certainly a lot of underlying issues that go to that. So let me ask you just kind of a housekeeping thing. There are five limitations on infringement, and you challenge each of those. Reasonably, both sides didn't have a lot of paper to deal with it. But if you win on any of those, does that mean you prevail on this case over? And if so, if you were to prevail hypothetically on any of those, that would obviate even a claim construction dispute that seems to be before us. That's a question, not an answer.
The answer is yes. If you find that any limitation is not literally satisfied, the case is over.
And would it'll also eliminate the 252 question as well, right?
It will moot.
There's no infringement, there's no reason to reach whether it applies to process claims.
Correct. It will moot the cross appeal. I urge the court, though, to resolve the claim construction dispute. And the claim construction dispute, I urge, because there is other litigation even between the parties, and Judge Payne stayed that litigation pending resolution of the claim construction dispute. And the claim construction dispute is...
So even if we agree with the claim construction, I mean, you're right, we try to be conscious of what related cases are and not skirt it, but if there's really no reason to reach it because it has reaching a conclusion on other grounds. It's a little aggressive, right, to just reach out there and start deciding other stuff.
You can pick any of the limitations, and that would resolve the entirety of the appeal and would resolve the case.
I mean, is it resolving, if we determine non-infringement under one of the limitations, resolving claim construction is just really an advisory opinion. And I know you just heard people like advisory opinions, but shouldn't we save it for a case where it's actually necessary to the resolution?
Well, here it does reflect such a fundamental misunderstanding of the claimed invention by the district court. The district court's opinion is premised on the claim construction decision, and it's on A11 of the district court's opinion. Or page 9 of the opinion.
Well, maybe you can convince Judge Payne to give you a different claim construction.
Well, we could do that as well. But the key limitation is the delay limitation, which was added in the prosecution, and our Amazon device does not perform that determination step. That's a 107-word limitation.
Hold on. Let me make sure I understand. Is the claim construction issue that, you know, in your wish list dreams of $292 bathing suits, that you would, in fact, have us resolve the order of limitations? Is that the thing you'd want us to do? Or is it something related to determining a delay? What is that magic claim construction issue that in your wish list we're going to review?
That the device must receive sound before any of the other processing steps can occur. It's that simple. And unfortunately, the district court wrote, the court again rejects Amazon's arguments that the accused products were required to receive a target sound signal prior to the determination of a delay.
And can I understand about the claim construction issue? Is the Amazon, I think, is the argument only this question about whether the target signal has to be when it has to be received, before or after, or are you suggesting that what I'm trying to get at is sometimes people say all of the claim limitations have to be proceed in the exact order, and then other times they say, well, there are specific limitations that clearly the language surrounding them dictates a certain order to. I think your argument is the latter of those two. Am I wrong?
Well, sufficient to resolve this appeal is that step two, the receiving step, must occur before the determining a delay step. So that step two must occur before step three. That is dispositive of this case based on the infringement theory that's being advocated by Vocalife.
The infringement theory dealing with the determining step.
Correct.
Which is one of five infringement theories.
Correct. Vocalife implicated acts of Amazon in order to comply or try to attempt to show the determining step. The trouble is that the steps by Amazon occur years before the customer ever speaks to the device. So the infringement theory presented at trial was the customer is the direct infringer by speaking to the device. And so the speaking must occur before we go down the rest of the claim. And I think they agree on that, but they won't agree that the determining a delay step must occur after the receiving sound signals. But you are correct. This claim construction dispute need not be decided because we did present other lack of substantial evidence arguments on other limitations.
So can you turn to one of those, the plurality of configurations one? And again, it's to no fault of anyone's that you're relegated to only several pages on each of those because there's so many issues, unfortunately, in this appeal. But the district court on JMAL referred to Doppler and MPAF, and he rested on, is it McAlexander's testimony? Why is that deficient? I mean, substantial evidence is a pretty easy standard to meet.
Because the claim language requires that the delay enables beamforming for said array of sound sensors in a plurality of configurations. Mm-hmm. And all McAlexander testified to was that the software is used in different devices with different configurations. This claim requires that the plurality of configurations be with the same sound sensors. And as the district court explained in his Markman opinion, that could occur if one of the sound sensors is turned off. And then you still would calculate delays with the remaining sound sensors and be able to calculate the delay and enable beamforming and then steer with the target sound signal in motion. And so just saying you can use it with different configurations in different products wouldn't comply with the claim language. The claim language requires that it be with said array of sound sensors, single device.
Okay, I'm just looking for a little more insight into why the district court was led astray. I mean, it seems like, as you presented at least, it seems like a fairly straightforward proposition.
I fully agree.
Is it your view that he just misunderstood McAlexander's testimony?
I think he did. I think the district court didn't understand the fundamentals of this claim dimension and that it requires the sound in order to do the delay, in order to do the steering, in order to work in the plurality of configurations. It was just McAlexander found words that he thought were similar in some documents and persuaded the jury, and I think the district court wanted and upheld the jury verdict. But there are many reasons why there cannot be literal infringement by customers of this very detailed 330-word claim. We picked only five. We actually thought we narrowed it, and we did narrow it, because this is just fundamentally real-time computing, which is not what the little Amazon Echo that sells for a few bucks can do. This is real-time, very sophisticated processing that is not present in a device like ours, which simply hears the loudest noise and selects a fixed beam. Very simple device compared to this very detailed, very particular. Not only does it require determining a delay, but determining delay in terms of the number of samples. This is a very narrow limitation. And of course, we don't do the delay, so we certainly don't do it in the number of samples. And so there's no such determination or calculation of any time.
There were counterclaims here, right, that were dismissed without prejudice? Were there invalidity counterclaims in this case?
Yeah, the invalidity issues were not appealed. That's for the Patent Office. So we're only here on the jury verdict of literal infringement, direct infringement by the user. The user, Amazon, is only alleged to induce the user's direct infringement. And if there are no further questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Okay. Okay, thank you, Mr. Ray. Mr. Fabricant? Am I saying your name wrong? Fabricant? How do you say your name?
Fabricant.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. This was a very hard-fought trial.
Counsel, they all are. Hey, I have claim construction. I feel like there is substantial evidence for the jury to find infringement of the element regarding timing, regardless of what the construction is. So is there any reason for us to decide that construction?
Well, I think there's a reason to decide the construction. Obviously, if the court is satisfied that it would be irrelevant to the ultimate decision whether the construction was upheld or not, then you know, we don't have to pursue that. I would say, however, that I think it's important to understand the non-infringement arguments on this appeal, that Judge Gilstrap got the construction completely right. And the reason I say that is it's in the claims. We started at a Markman with Amazon taking the position that it had to be in the exact order of the claims as written, the order of steps. Then when Judge Gilstrap clearly saw that they had inconsistent arguments because they said at the claim construction hearing, well, not everyone has to be particularly in order. You can flip the determining delay step with the estimating step. That would be okay. You could flip some of these steps, and then they focused only on the first and second step, receiving and determining a delay. So they had inconsistency in their own argument. But I think most important what the court saw was the words of the claims themselves. The determining a delay element of Claim 1 specifically provides that there will be aspects of the determination which will take place before the receipt of the sound signal. It's in the claim language. In fact, the claim language specifically...
A delay based on an angle can't be determined until the angle itself is formed, right?
I disagree, Your Honor.
What?
Here's why I disagree. There are angles that can be predetermined. In fact, the claim says a predefined angle in the element determining a delay. It states an origin of said array of said sound sensors as a function of distance between each of said sound sensors. That could be determined in advance. And in fact was determined in advance by Amazon as the code reflects. And then it states and said original a predefined angle between each of said sound sensors and a reference axis. A predefined angle. That's what's in the code. That's what Mr. McAlexander testified to. That would be defined before the receipt of the target sound signal. Now, I want this court to understand our position clearly. We are not saying, and we have never said in this case, nor at trial, that the determination step is completed before the receipt of the target sound signal. We have never said that. What the code showed and what we presented to trial was that there are aspects of the determination which do, in fact, take place in the laboratory before that code is loaded and compiled and loaded onto the device. Those are those predefined angles. Those are those measurements. Once the customer says Alexa and the device wakes up, that's the receipt of the sound signal. The determination of the delay is then made. And the azimuth angle, Your Honor, is determined. That's different than the predefined angle. So we've never taken the position, and that's why it may not be important that the court resolve the claim construction issue order of steps, because we presented substantial evidence regardless that Amazon performed these steps. It was never our position at trial that the determination step occurred before the receipt of the sound signal. And I think that's critical. Now, I think the court has seen that every single aspect of this claim has been challenged by Amazon on this appeal. For example, the adaptive beamformer, which they denied throughout the entire trial, is replete throughout all of their source code and documents, including a peer review paper submitted by the very engineers who designed this, published to the world as to how their device worked. Mr. Alexander relied on that document. They also run from a 74-page Amazon copyrighted publication that was published on Amazon website, which teaches how this whole system works. Mr. Alexander relied on that. That shows the calculation of the delay. That shows the angle. He also relied on the source code. I think very important to understand here when we get to the non-infringement arguments, the only one who introduced source code at this trial was Vocalife. And at the end of the deliberations, the jury asked, in the middle of the deliberations, they had a question, they wanted to see the source code. And the only source code was Vocalife's presentation. The reason that's important, they didn't try to show the code that supposedly would prove non-infringement.
My kiddos would tell me to advise you to have some sosh. Okay. You're being a little loud and yelling at us.
Apologize, Your Honor. I was getting enthusiastic.
Yes.
Sorry.
Just a little too enthusiastic.
Dial it down. It does tie back to the claims of construction because I think with this many aspects of those ordered steps, to have ordered the steps as Amazon had asked the court to do would have been error. But it really comes down to the issue of non-infringement. Was substantial evidence on each of these elements presented? And this, I think in the briefing and all of the exhibits which are attached to the appendix, Mr. Alexander points to all of these variance documents, not just the source code. And we're talking about many renditions of source code. He points to the actual files. He points in four different versions of code. He points to the firmware that has been compiled and put on the device. He points to the peer review article written by the Amazon engineers. He points to the publication. He points to other lab notebooks that were produced, two specific lab notebooks that specifically in detail discuss the front end of the audio. Words like sound localization unit, those are used in those documents. The claim says if you have a sound localization unit, then you have spatial location. Those words are used in the Amazon documents. Same thing with adaptive beamforming. Those words are used in the Amazon documents. And the testimony of the critical key corporate witness of Amazon at trial when confronted with this adaptive beamforming language was, well, it's not real adaptive beamforming. Those were the words. It's not real adaptive beamforming. It's in the code. It's in the description of the algorithms. It's in all of our publications, but it's not real. And therefore, I would say on the evidence, there is substantial evidence as to each and every one of these elements, including the delay determination, the steering connectivity pattern, the spatial location, and the configuration. All of that, and Mr. McAlexander, in very lengthy testimony, went through, pointed to the files in the code or these publications to address where this evidence was found. And I think importantly, this was an indirect infringement case. Our case was that the customer who used the device and triggered the device by saying Alexa.
How is the determining delay in the Echo device enabled for multiple configurations?
It's enabled for multiple configurations, Your Honor, because there can be any number of microphones in the device. This is not a device that has a specific requirement that it have three microphones. The testimony was clear. It can have between 2 and 8 microphones. It has to have more than one. It could have multiple microphones. The code was designed and the claim was written so that it would cover multiple variable configurations, whether it's a 2 or 4.
That doesn't mean that the same code is loaded onto products with different microphones. Configurations, does it?
Not necessarily, no. In other words, there is the same code.
Isn't that what you had to show?
No, the code is loaded on multiple products with varying microphones. That's exactly what happens. That's exactly what Mr. McAlexander found. That's what the Amazon witnesses testified to, that their products had multiple microphones. In fact, I think the exact testimony was between 2 and 8, and that this same code operates regardless of the configuration. That was the Amazon testimony, as well as what's reflected in the source code, as well as what Mr. McAlexander found in his expert testimony.
But isn't there only one configuration on the device? There's different devices that have different configurations, but the actual device sold may have 2, may have 4, may have 8, but there's not multiple configurations on that device.
Well, there could be in these situations where not all of the microphones are operating, or certain microphones aren't receiving the sound or performing as designed. But I don't believe the patent, the claim, nor the patent itself. There is nowhere within the specification or the intrinsic record of this patent which requires that the multiple plurality of configurations be solely directed to an individual device. That's I don't believe anywhere in the intrinsic record. If Your Honor, no further questions on this portion, I'll reserve my time for the cross-appeal issues. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Ray, you have rebuttal?
If you want to raise your cross-appeal issues, you have to argue them now.
Well, I mean, yeah.
You don't get the last word on here. You get the last word. But
sorry. All right.
Apologize. You don't have to argue them.
No,
I
apologize,
Your Honor.
You
don't want to tell us about them.
I will briefly address them. The first issue is the Section 252 issue with respect to the statutory language. And I think the best argument here is that there has been no statutory construction as we believe this court should engage in. We have two different sentences of the second paragraph of 252. The first clearly creates absolute intervening rights for a specific thing, when a specific thing is identified, without question. The second sentence gives the court, the district court, equitable rights under certain circumstances to extend that, and the word processes are used in that second sentence. I think that in and of itself indicates that Congress's intent was not to include processes or methods in the absolute intervening right section of that provision. Not unlike in the 287 statute dealing with marking, where it's clear that a method need not be marked. And so our argument essentially is under 252 is a statutory construction argument. And we don't think it has really been resolved head on by any Federal Circuit decision that we can find. And the second argument for the cross appeal is the court's prohibiting the plaintiff from presenting its damages prior to the filing of the complaint based on inducement in light of willful blindness. And here we think the court erred because we presented an extensive willful blindness case which the court allowed on willful infringement. And that record was presented, but the court allowed us to present that on willful infringement and granted the motion prohibiting us from presenting the same evidence and seeking those additional damages between the time of the inducement prior to the complaint. We were prohibited from presenting those damages.
Why would the only evidence you produced was evidence about knowledge of the 756 patent? That's completely irrelevant to willful blindness of the 049 patent. They're different patents.
Well, Your Honor, we disagree because this was a long history, as was set forth in the briefs, beginning in 2011, running for many years with the relationship between the inventors and Amazon. And while it's true that they were put on specific notice of the original patent in 2014,
it was surrendered. It was surrendered. Why does that mean they're willfully blind that some reissue came out later?
Well, Your Honor, the evidence at trial was that the corporate policy of Amazon, as testified to by the corporate representatives, was for the employees to specifically disregard any information.
Well, you're saying this was at trial. This was ruled on at summary judgment. Whatever evidence was at trial was not part of the record at summary judgment. You had to overcome summary judgment, right? What was your evidence at summary judgment? That's the question before us. Not did something come out at trial that shows you might have been able to overcome summary judgment but didn't.
The evidence of summary judgment was that there had been this long history of relationship. They were aware of the original patent. And even though it was surrendered, their corporate policy was not to follow these patents. They instructed their employees to in effect, close their eyes. This is a situation where they receive complaints and protests by these inventors because when the product launched, they were very upset because they had meetings with Amazon.
To the summary judgment, did you introduce evidence at that time that the Amazon employees were told, as you just said, not to follow the patents?
That came out of trial, Your Honor.
So everything you just said, it was completely not in existence in your summary judgment. So how could the court have erred in granting summary judgment?
The history of the relationship between the parties.
You would like us to hold it's improper for a court to grant summary judgment when all you've proven is knowledge of a patent that was surrendered. You want us to create an affirmative obligation that companies are required and willfully blind if they don't continue to spend lots of dollars following every surrendered patent? It's absurd. That's an absurd request on your part.
Well, I respectfully would state that in a situation where a company invites these small companies in to see their technology, take their presentations, listen to their presentations, have the engineers of the company sit and develop a product which is then launched, which is, as we've alleged in this case, infringing on the patented technology. And the employees are instructed in situations like that that they can not have to follow the no one.
None of which was in your summary judgment response. Okay, I think your time is up.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Ray, you have some rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor. With regard to the claim and the claim construction, I don't think we could have been any more clear below as to the sequence of the steps than in our demonstratives, which are set forth in Joint Appendix 1097 and 1098. And we actually show with arrows what step follows which step. And there's only two steps where there's any ambiguity, but those weren't relevant for the infringement and for the presentation of the evidence because they agreed in the district court that the receiving step must occur before the determining step, and they only disputed steps at the bottom of the claim. And this is shown in Joint Appendix 1098. So I disagree with the history of the claim construction dispute.
For what it's worth, I think you're right. I think that the receiving step has to occur before the determining step. But I just don't see how that resolves the case, and I feel like there are other things that might resolve the case.
Yes, and
gave you a record.
Yes, and the way it makes it easiest to resolve the case is, as you indicated, you do need the sound to have the angle in the next step. And with regard to the plurality of configurations, the reason why that's another good ground is Mr. Alexander agreed.
But I can resolve the plurality of configurations without touching the order of steps.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And we gave five grounds that you could resolve without going to the order of steps.
I know, and not all of them were as good as the plurality of configurations. You might want to be just a tiny bit more selective.
I think number of samples was my favorite, so we all had a debate which one, and we had disagreements on which one was best. But on the plurality of configurations, if we're going to go there, Mr. McAlexander repeatedly admitted that the weighting factors and the simulation model determinations were specific to one particular microphone geometry. And those are at Joint Appendix 6325, 6326, 6327, twice on 27, 28, and 6437, where he repeatedly admitted that the devices are configured for one and one only.
The configuration of the microphones change, there's no evidence that it can determine a delay.
Correct.
That's the problem.
Correct.
I got it.
Thank you very much.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Ray. Thank you, Mr. Fabricant. The case is taken under submission. He didn't touch upon your cross appeal, so we didn't give you rebuttal. He didn't touch your cross appeal.
I understand.
Just wanted to explain. So, thanks.